From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
And welcome. It is the Disc Golf News for the week of May 16, 2005. I'm Brian Sullivan, and I would like to say thanks for your patience last week as we had no radio show. Why? Well, when your computer is on fire, you don't do a radio show. No, you just unplug and run. But fortunately for us, a new motherboard later means that we are a go for the show this week and hopefully many, many consecutive weeks to come. And to come at you this time are some of these interesting items. Pat Vitale has some tips on improving your roller shot in the 60-second clinic. And we've got results from last weekend's Golden State Classic National Tour event in Los Angeles. Some exciting finishes there. Iowa's Jay Redding experiences some culture shock in Los Angeles. He'll explain in the Yeti Road Report. And we'll talk with one of the hottest touring players of the season. Oregon's David Feldberg is our guest this week. That and more coming up on this edition of PDGA Radio News. Brought to you by Discraft at discraft.com. Also by No Obstacles Disc Golf at plu-ent.com. And Innova Champion Discs, InnovaDiscs.com. The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra-long glide will add D to your drive no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion line plastic, so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with a new Sidewinder from Innova, number one in disc golf. It was a battle of epic proportions this past weekend in La Mirada, California, at the Golden State Classic. Over 9,000 feet on this course, over 90 degrees on Friday. Who would survive? Well, how about Steve the Cup Wisecup? PDGA number 1467 shoots the lights out in the third round, but he can't get Brad Hammack off his back. They tie up after regulation. Hammack will win the playoff. Mike Raley will take third along with Andrew Back, who ties up there. Now in the women's division, Juliana Corver heads out to the coast, wins handily by nine, in fact, for Des Redding, who's going to take second place. Carrie Berlager takes third for the women. And in the open division, David Feldberg and Barry Schultz. Can anyone catch Ken Climo, who shoots a new course record in the second round? No. Climo, two putts his way to victory. Feldberg and Schultz tie up for second. Stevie Rico takes fourth. And tournament director Tim Zielinski had this to say about the finish in the Masters division.
Steve made about a 120-foot putt approach to get within one of Brad, and then Brad on the same hole had a 15-footer that blew through the chains to even them up, and then a couple of holes later they came to 18. Steve makes a long putt to tie and send it into overtime. Then they go to the first tee and Brad steps up and pins his drive and took all the suspense out of what was a really exciting final round.
Time now for the 60-second clinic. Our guest in the clinic this week is South Bend, Indiana's Pat Vitale. He is PDGA number 10,100. His rating is 999. He's a family guy, so he doesn't tour a lot, but this guy has got game. And this week in the clinic, he's going to share with you some tips on improving your roller shot.
First of all, the disc I would use would probably be a ZXS. Or I'm using the Glide now, which is a new Discraft disc that I love for rolling. And the only way I can explain it is just, you know, it's a total shank shot. You know, if you ever think about shanking really bad, you overextend the disc, you angle it. Actually, I come over from behind and come over the top of my body instead of coming straight across or overpowering it. And you just kind of, it's like turning a steering wheel. You throw it out hard, you throw it on an angle, almost straight up and down, and then you just got to learn how to land on those certain angles to get it to work.
Professional disc golfer Pat Vitale lives and works in South Bend, Indiana.
When you think disc golf, think No Obstacles. No Obstacles Disc Golf is found at www.plu-ent.com. Find custom dive discs, accessories, grip enhancement, apparel, practice baskets, and unique disc items like the fabulous limited edition Discraft Michigan Disc Golf Series Super Color Fundraiser Discs. When you think disc golf, think no obstacles at plu-ent.com.
Hi, this is Tim McGill, and you're listening to PDJ Radio News.
In the big picture this week, we touch base with a guy who seems to be coming into his own. He is Eugene, Oregon's David Feldberg. Now, Mr. Feldberg, along with Barry Schultz, are the only two players in the Open Division to have finished top five at the Worlds for the past 3 years. And in 2005, David Feldberg is showing no signs of letting up. In the first of a two-part discussion, we'll talk with David Feldberg about his history in the game and about life on the road.
David Feldberg, welcome to PDJ Radio.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good, thanks. And clearly you are doing good these days. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, give us a little bit of your history, how you got started in disc golf.
Well, I got started in disc golf in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I was a college student, minding my own business, and some friends took me out to the local course called Colebrook Disc Golf Park. And Larry Lebon's league was the first organized thing I ever played in. And they sent me to the AM World Championship, where I took 187th place.
And what year was that?
That was in 1997. I showed up, I only had 3 discs. Didn't realize what I was getting into. But it was only 45 minutes from my house, and it opened my eyes.
So you were hooked at that point?
Oh, yeah. I saw a kid do a 360, and he threw it like 400 feet, and I just couldn't even believe it. So I went home and started practicing and met the Winnie crew, and they took me on the road and took off from there.
And let's talk a little bit about your time with the Winnie crew. First of all, the personnel.
Originally, it was Darren Harper, Todd Branch, and Al Shack. And Darren Harper didn't work out after about a month on the road. And they came home and picked me up, a nobody that no one had ever heard of. And we started traveling around, and then by the end of the year, Sue Stevens joined on, and we became the Winnie crew. And we traveled around for a couple of years, and then Sue and Al wanted to do their own thing. And we picked up Avery Jenkins, and then we were the new Winnie crew. And then we traveled around for a couple more years and really extended our play to a higher level. And Todd had to go back to work, and now me and Avery Jenkins tore around ourselves as best we can. We got ourselves a new motorhome. We'll be on the road this year with a guy named Randall Cox from Oregon. He's a pro. And we'll see us out there. We have a 98 Tioga V10.
So you first went on tour with the Winnie crew what year?
1999.
And compare and contrast for me a little bit the differences and the similarities from then and now as far as full-time touring.
Well, back then, nobody was really doing it except for maybe Ron Russell. And it was kind of a new experience, and everywhere we went, the tournaments filled up, and you had to have your money in 3-4 months ahead of time, and there was lots of players to play against. The competition level, I don't think the scores were as well, but there was a lot more players who could shoot the scores. Nowadays, it seems like only the cream of the crop has stayed around, and going to the tournaments, the level is higher, but there's less of the middle players. And I don't know why that is, but we're hoping they'll come back.
Do you think perhaps that the reason behind the fact that, you know, you point out that some of those mid-level players, you know, maybe their player ratings are somewhere in the 980 level, do you think maybe that they just feel like you know, they were tired to donating to the players of higher caliber and gave up on the tournament scene?
Well, I think it's a combination of that and the fact that there was a lot of things going on with the sport, with some people with their behavior issues and some people in the sport that maybe weren't liked and they were acting up, and that rubbed some people the wrong way. And then raising the prices to 125, that was maybe a little too much for them. And I think it just weeded people out here and there. And then now we're really seeing the effects of it, because as an overall whole, there's a lot less. But I think that we're getting a lot new people coming in. And I think that we'll have a chance of getting the field back up to those sizes again without the troubled players.
Back in 99, when you first hit the road, you said that There was only a few people out there, like Ron Russell. And I would suggest that probably by 2002, there was a huge crop out. And now, this year, we're missing a lot of the players that were out there full-time. For example, the Winnie crew now, most of those players are not on tour full-time. The Flying Eye crew, including former world champ Cameron Todd and his touring mates, are off the road. Ron Russell is gone. Are the full-time touring players abandoning the sport? Are they just tired of life on the road, or do you see a new crop of players out there hitting the road?
It's a combination of both. I do see a new crop, but at the same time, players like Ron Russell, he's just getting a little older, and he put a lot of years in. I think it wore him down. So he's kind of almost in retirement. I think we'll see him in a couple years once he gets the feel for it again and wants to play. But he's just a long time. It wore him out. And, Cameron Todd, he's just off doing the Cameron Todd thing. Always something new, so maybe we'll see him in a couple of years. But in general, I think that the players were too good. You couldn't just, at around 2002, people really started to come out, like you said, people that maybe weren't good enough to make a living at. And the level of competition at the top was so high that they couldn't sustain enough cash to stay out there. So they stopped coming, and then the top players kind of started dissipating themselves and started going to select tournaments where they know they could have a good time and play a good course. And so the tour kind of disbanded. But now I'm seeing all these younger kids come in, and they're coming in little groups and cars, and they're showing up at these tournaments, and they're throwing 500 feet, making 50 footers, and it's amazing. They're about 17 to 22 years old. There's probably 10 of them in the country that are going to be world-class players in the next year or two.
And name off some of the players that you see the most potential in right now.
I'd have to say Justin Jerrigan from North Carolina. Dakota Hatfield from Oklahoma. I'd have to go with Brody Miller and Nate Sexton from Oregon. They're both playing around 1,000 golf, cashing in their own tournaments. I'd have to go with some of even the long shot players that haven't even shown their skills yet, like Scott Slater from Michigan. Big young kid, he's got a lot of energy. Some young players in Texas, like Alexi Bubis' group. He's from Arkansas, but he has some friends from Texas. They all throw far. They're all throwing 500-600 feet. Amazing.
Dave Feldberg, you're having yourself, it looks to be probably your best year to date. You finished a couple of first places at the St. Patrick's Open and the Windy River. You also had a first at a national tour event a couple of weeks ago at Waco. You finished tied for second this past weekend at the Golden State. Let me ask you this. You started touring in 99. You really didn't turn on your game until about 2002. You finished fourth that year at the Worlds. You've got two fifth-place finishes since then at Worlds. So do you think it really takes a few years of serious everyday play to get your game to the level that you've now found yourself at?
I think it does. I think it's more about a variety of play. I think a lot of these young players we're seeing out there, a lot of them I didn't mention already, they have great throwing skills, and they putt well, and they know what they're doing, but they haven't played in such a variety of courses and a variety of situations and weather and places. So they might be good where they know where they're good, but if you take them maybe to a different course, say like Dakota Hatfield at Santa Cruz, you might not do so well the first couple of times because you're not sure how to do it, not because you can't do it. And so I think it takes a couple years of seasoning to play the variety of courses that the National Tour requires you to play. And I think that's why at the Worlds you always see the same players at the top, because the Worlds usually mixes up a variety of courses. So you get your wooded East Coast courses, and you get your elevated West Coast courses, and you get your long flat the middle courses all in one tournament. And that's why you see the same top players at the top, because they have the experience of playing a variety of golf. They're not just good at one particular aspect of the game.
Now, on top of the variety of courses that you play, how important do you feel it is to play on a daily basis to reach the top level?
I feel when you're first learning, probably it's real important because you're getting the feel for it. I feel once you've gotten to a level where you think that you're a 1,000-ranked player and you're really good, I think maybe every other day is something you need to do. And I think players like Ken Climel can get away with 2 to 3 days a week. because he's honed his skills so well that he's just going out there and practicing the same thing over and over again for 10, 15 years. He knows what he needs to do and what shots he needs. So for me, before I go to one of those large events like last weekend, I go out with a special bag of discs. I'm going to use just the deck courses that's in there. And I throw them all week the exact same way and imagine that I'm on the course playing those particular holes. And I think that has a lot to do with the mental preparation as well with the disc and the knowledge.
So give us an idea, Dave Feldberg, of what is coming up for you as far as the tour. Let's look forward to the next month. For example, this coming weekend, we've got the Masters Cup in Santa Cruz and, of course, the Beaver State Fund.
Yeah, I'm playing in the Masters Cup. I'm looking to improve my finish from second last year to maybe have a chance to win, get used to the course. And, again, the next weekend's the Beaver State Fling, where Schultz beat me in a playoff last year. I'd love to take him out in front of the home crowd. And then after that, there's the biggest, one of the biggest B-tiers in the world, the one that me and Avery run, called the Great Northwest Open. That's on a ski resort. Going to that. That'll be fun. And then out to the Kansas City Wide Open to defend my title from last year.
We've been talking with Eugene, Oregon's David Feldberg, who finished in first place 2 weeks ago in Waco and tied for second last weekend at the Golden State Classic National Tour event in California. Here's a question for you. What do a Wookiee and a Yeti have in common? You'll know by the end of this report. It's the Yeti Road Report with Jay Redding.
This is Yeti, and this week I'm calling from Stearns Wharf in beautiful Santa Barbara, California. Although this morning I felt more like Snake Plissken in Escape from L.A. It was crazy driving out of that mess. In actuality, L.A. is small in land area compared to the surrounding area of city sprawl. You probably heard the homage of 100 suburbs in search of a city. I mean, this place is pretty crazy. The first couple of days that we landed in town, I mean, straight out of Compton, there was a low-speed 12-minute car chase of a vehicle that matched another vehicle. And when the cops finally surrounded it, there was much confusion at the vehicle, and shots were fired, which led to more shots fired. And the next thing they knew, 120 rounds were shelled into this vehicle of an unarmed man. Then the next day, the district attorney investigator and five family members were all found shot to death in their home. And then the next day, another car chase, this one 100 miles per hour. And the cops, with the confusion the other day, spent no time in wasting this guy when he jumped out with a gun at a busy pet mall. Crazy? Nuts is what I'm saying. But, you know, once we figured out the ropes of the L.A. freeway, it was kind of cool. We started to get into the culture and the landscape of the place. I mean, each city has its own unique character and vibe. And the scenery? Wow. Mountains to the right of me, ocean to the left. Holy cow, this place is pretty incredible when you look beyond the massive amounts of people running around. We got a great chance to stay in a little beach town near Laguna Beach with around the block Joy Williams. And we had a super time at the Golden State Classic. It was cool seeing all the California SoCal gang. And, of course, La Mirada lived up to its championship course caliber. And we also had a chance to check out the very first pole-hole disc golf course in Oak Grove near Pasadena. It was installed in 1976. So you can imagine with all the sprawl since then, they've been having a tough time keeping that course in the ground. So get a chance to play that if you ever get into this neck of the woods. The good news is I got a couple more weeks up the coast of California. The bad news is that my craft cakes and steamer beer look like they're on their way out to the pier. So until next time, this is Yeti for PDGA Radio. Roar!
As you might guess, the disc golf calendar is more packed than a rookie pro's bag this weekend, May 21st and 22nd. The National Tour heads north up the California coast. It's the Masters Cup in Santa Cruz. That's pros only. Ams are headed to Sarasota for the Sarasota Am Championships. In Salt Lake, it's the Creekside Open. The Crooked Creek Classic in Chapin, South Carolina. Spokane hosting the Downriver Open. And the Hall of Chains Classic in Canton, Ohio. Plus the St. Louis Open in Missouri. Louisville hosting the Fling a Thing Pro-Am Doubles. The Brandywine Breeze in Rockland, Delaware. Plus in Highbridge, Wisconsin, it's the Granite Ridge Open. The Legion of Doom
in Marion, Iowa. In New Mexico, it's the Rabbit Run, the Whistler's Bend Double Shootout in Roseburg, Oregon, a whole bunch more. Check the full list day or night. PDGA.com. And finally this week, an event that you will not want to miss, but you may not have heard about. The Highland Fling. Can you guess where that puppy is? Scotland. Yeah, this is part of the British Disc Golf Association, the BDGA. Next month, June 11th to 12th, get yourself a plane ticket. Go over. You will love this event. And, of course, you know, they're a bunch of disc golfers, so they're all great people. And for more information, go to highlandflingers.org.uk. If you have been sitting on a waiting list for Pro Worlds, good news for you, you're in. I don't care who you are. If you are on a waiting list for Pro Worlds, you're in. Now, on the other hand, if you're an AM and you've been on the waiting list to get to Flagstaff this year, those waiting lists will be reviewed this week. You should be finding out very soon if you're in for AM Worlds or not. And finally, this, you may have heard that Bruce Brakel, our oversight director, has had to step down. It was his own decision. No, nobody forced him out or anything bad or nothing like that. But that does leave us with an open board seat. So if you are interested in running as the interim oversight director for the Professional Disc Golf Association, we would ask you to contact the office. That's office@pdga.com. And that, my friends, is the Disc Golf News for the week of May 16th for the PDGA. I'm Brian Sullivan. Thanks to our sponsors, Discraft, No Obstacles Disc Golf, and Innova Champion Disc. And until next week, I hope you will get out there, huck some plastic, make sure your computer is not on fire, and keep them in the fairways.